last week we launched a capital campaign that we are calling Restore His House. Okay? I gave you a little bit of the history behind that, so I'm not going to go over that today. But we did request that, you know, last week we didn't ask for anything, didn't want you to commit to anything, but we requested that you go and you pray over your part about the story you want your money that has been entrusted to you to tell. Because if you are generous with your money, it's going to tell a story. You are going to impact lives around the world. You are going to impact lives here in this community. And so we are asking that you give above and beyond your regular giving to the Lord. And we know that in God's economy, He multiplies gifts. He multiplies gifts of generosity. Where you give $5, He turns into $30. Okay? And He alone can work mysteriously like this. Now, it may not happen there in the very, you know, plate when you put it in, or the electronic transfer from your account to, you know, the church's account. All right? It may not happen in that very moment, but when we are faithful and we continue to trust Him, God seems to multiply. And so you can see here, this is our measuring stick, if you will. No thermometers this go around. We're building bricks because we're painting bricks. And so $500, each $500 gets colored in. And this what we have, and that's what we're going with. And so this is phase one. If you have any questions, see me. I'll get you that information about what all is included in phase one. For those of you right now trying to count the bricks to make sure that it equals the $35,000, just stop, because it does. Okay? I'll go ahead and save you that time right now. But I want you to know that we're going to be pushing, and it's simply when you feel led to give, you just mark it. If you're giving through the offering plate, if you're giving online, there's a location online to give under the menu drop-down button. So all that's available. You just mark it, because we're not mind readers. We do emphasize, please, that if you are not a regular giver, that be your first step. That if you're not just a faithful giver to this ministry, that be your first step. And then everything that's given to this be above and beyond. Okay? So, this year, with this in mind, we are exploring and we are encouraging spiritual gifts to become more, spiritual disciplines to become more part of our life. Healthy habits or disciplines always lead to fruit or spiritual maturity. And as followers of Jesus, I hope you desire to become like Him. I'm going to say that one more time. There's probably two things that I would want you to take away from this sermon. This being one of them. That as followers of Jesus, I hope and we pray that you desire to become like Jesus. After all, if we follow Him, because that's what we're called to do, we're called to be followers. If we follow Him and we allow Him to work in our life, He will make us part of the invitation to become like Him. This happens through disciplines. Church, showing up to church is not going to be the only ingredient that God uses to make you to become like Him. That's like trying to cook a full course meal and you add salt. And that's all you've got is salt. You've got to have all the other ingredients. You've got to have all the other components that go into whatever it is you, the master chef, is trying to create in order for there to be this wonderful meal. If you just have one ingredient, it's not going to work. So there has to be other disciplines. There has to be other habits. And when those things become part of our life, we become more like Him as we practice giving more. and we trust Him with what He has entrusted to us, we become like Him. Generosity is a characteristic of Jesus. Well, I can't be a Scrooge and hold on to everything and not and become fully like Him. I've got to become generous. Now, that doesn't mean I'm willy-nilly and just throwing money out. Okay? I'm deciding in my heart, I'm making a plan, and I'm following through with it. And we challenged you last week in your giving that let it be a progressive giving. Try to outgive yourself from the year before. And as you practice generosity, you are becoming more like Him. That's what spiritual disciplines are all about. It's not some, oh great, burdensome checklist of things I've got to do to be a Christian. I've got to do these things. I've got to worship. I've got to pray. I've got to that F word, right? Fast. I've got to text. We don't even know what text is. Half of y'all reading that and like, sweet, I got that one down. No, we're not talking about the app on your phone that allows you to iMessage other people and text other people. We're talking about knowing the text, God's Word. Okay? That's what we are saying there. When I take these and other spiritual disciplines that we explore this year into my life, I'm becoming like Him. But today, we do begin our series on the core four. Four core spiritual disciplines that when understood, that's important, we've got to understand it, and lived out, they help us to become like Jesus. Now, we're not telling you what order we're doing this in because I know the day that we do fasting, if I tell you when we're doing fasting, nobody's showing up to church that day. So it's going to be a surprise. You don't know when. As a matter of fact, we're going to do fasting right now. I'm just kidding. We're doing worship today. The core four, you see it, prayer, text, study, fasting, worship. And here's the deal about these four disciplines right here. That's why we call them the core four. These were all central to the Jewish faith long before Jesus even came along. And they're disciplines that even Jesus Himself would have practiced, and we see that He practiced them. And so that's why we are calling them the core four. There are many other spiritual disciplines and habits, but we are going to start with this foundational four. And you're going to see these four brought up throughout the year as they're mixed in with other sermon series. But today we talk about worship. Worship is one of these church words that gets used, I believe, incompletely, quite often. I believe it's a word that we use in church circles that gets used incompletely. We call this here a worship service. And most of the time, this is where worship stops. When we talk about worship outside of this hour where we're at other circles, other friends, at work, having conversations, how was worship yesterday? It's one of those substitute words for church. When we talk about oftentimes worship, we naturally, for some reason, it's been ingrained in us to go to this hour. I get asked this, hey, at your church, what's your worship style? What's my worship style? Yeah, are you contemporary? Are you modern? You know, are you old school? Y'all got an organ, hymns, huh? What's your worship style? And we do this often. And not that that is wrong. It's incomplete, I believe. I asked our student life group the other day about, hey, tell me what worship is. And just about everyone, I don't remember exactly how it went, but just about every single one of them had something to do with the church service. Now, their definitions, I was surprised, that went beyond the church service. So well done to the students. Right? But a lot of times, in most church circles, we limit worship to singing, to praying, to communion, to preaching, to giving. And I hear this all the time, that the point of worship is to prepare our hearts and minds for the teaching sermon element. I get that. As a matter of fact, I've taken classes that's been part of what takes place, is that you've got to have a proper song service so that our hearts and our minds are prepared for the sermon, for the teaching. That puts a lot of pressure on the people on this stage. They got to get it right. As a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and tell you, it must be their fault. If your hearts aren't ready, it must be their fault. Man, these people aren't growing. It can't be my teaching. Must be the worship's not right. No. Every single thing that we're doing is worship. And so I think that if we can get to the place where we quit limiting worship to just this hour and a half, we're going to start to develop a better understanding. I don't think we intentionally limit worship to this hour and a half, to what takes place at Sundays at 10:30. But when we get to the proper understanding, we realize that worship is so much bigger. So much bigger than this. So I have a definition. Now I'm going to give you that in a minute. So don't throw it up there yet. I have a definition, and I was taught this definition years ago. I've actually shared this definition with you. Okay, Louis Giglio, who is a pastor, he's famous. You've probably heard him speak somewhere along the way. Is the one who impacted my life with what I believe is a better understanding of the spiritual discipline of worship. But before I get to the definition, I want to share a verse with you. And I want you to think through these verses. Again, a popular verse, something that you have seen before. And it's Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. But I want us to focus on verse 1, right? And so here we go. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all He has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind He will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship Him. Don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Okay, Paul tells us, verse 1, that this is the accurate way to worship God. Now, I want to point out that he did not list the elements of this service in here, did he? He didn't say the accurate way to worship God is to sing the songs that you like, listen to and tolerate the songs you don't like, participate in the elements, and take good notes during the sermon. He goes way beyond that. He tells us the accurate way to worship God is to offer your body, your life, to God because of what He has done. Let your life be a living and holy sacrifice. And I don't know about you, but that seems to involve so much more than the hour and a half we limit worship to here on Sunday mornings. We're to offer our life to God. Offer my life to God. That means that every aspect of Michael is in every minute of every day is to be offered to God. So whether I'm prepping for a sermon or I'm hanging out with my family or engaging with people at my children's school events, whatever it is that I am doing, whatever time of day it is, wherever I am, that should honor God. What I choose to watch on TV, he went there. What I choose to peruse on the internet, What I choose to listen to should honor God. That is what Paul says is the accurate form of worship. This is truly the way to worship Him. So, here's our definition. It's lengthy. We're going to put it up there and we're going to leave it up there and we're going to talk through this. And so, if you can't see that, here it is. It's worship is our response, both corporate and personal, to God for who He is and what He has done, expressed in and by the things we say and the way we live. That's the definition that I often teach from. It's not the first time that you have heard this, but it's, I think, and you can Google definitions of worship. Not now. You can Google definitions of worship, and you're going to find a lengthy list. And I'll go ahead and tell you this. A lot of them have to do with our response to God. Okay? But I love how this is broken down. Worship is our response, both corporate and personal, to God for who He is and what He has done, expressed in and by the things we say and the way we live. So let's break this down. Worship is a response. That's the basis of worship. The actual Hebrew word for worship, I can't pronounce, but I'll tell you what it means. The actual Hebrew word for worship means on bended knee. It is a posture of submission. So I want you to think about that. In when worship is brought up in God's economy, in the Old Testament, when it is mentioned and discussed, the word worship means on bended knee, and it's a posture of submission. Because when I am coming before and I am bowing down to someone, I am saying that I am submitting to you. Now, don't miss this and don't read into this too much that I'm saying that you're to spend your entire time on your knees before the Lord. Doesn't kind of work like that. However, as we go through life, as we go through our day, we should have a posture of submission to the Lord. And so worship is a response, okay? It's a response from us, and it takes place on a corporate and personal level. And this is important. Okay? It takes place on a corporate level. This is a form of worship. Our interaction with one another over donuts is part of worship. Our interaction at life group, when we're sitting there and someone's opening up, am I listening to them? Am I respecting them? Or am I over here worried about my own deal? That is part of worship. When we are gathered together with our brothers and sisters, and there is interaction, that is all part of worship. When we come into this room and we sing songs, that is very much part of worship. It really and truly is. It's an incredibly important part. One that, I'll be honest with you, I don't give enough to. And I was having a conversation with someone about the celebration, the music part of church here, and as I was talking through things, and someone said something to me that I don't like. And it's someone that has been in a small church, and he's been at a big church, and he's been at a mega church, and he said, "You want to know who the most influential person is when it comes to worship at your church?" I'm like, "Yeah, the worship pastor, the guy we pay. That guy, right there. Ponytail and all. That one." He said, "The senior minister." Whoa, 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 no, no, no. He goes, "No, And I'm like, and I'm, you know, trying to be humble, say, oh no, there's more there's people more important than me, and I believe everybody's more important than me, truthfully. And see my humility right there? Did y'all see that? I was like, this whole thing. I said, I believe that. And he goes, I'll tell you this right here. He goes, and you can try to escape this all you want, Michael. He goes, you can try to escape it all you want. He goes, but you are more influential than anything that's happened up on this stage. Get over yourself. And I don't like that. But I know that when it comes to what we're trying to do here and honoring God, I don't need to be back there worried about the sermon. And I mean, if I'm worrying about the sermon, as I'm always going over the sermon during this time period and making sure that, you know, all my clever jokes are in there and sarcastic comments are in there and all that kind of stuff is in order and that kind of stuff, you know what? I'm missing really and truly the moment of what's going on, because worship is corporate too. So what takes place here is huge. And I'm going to step on some toes here. I'm going to go down this. We're not going to get on a soapbox. But the minute we start saying, I'm not singing because I don't like that song, we suddenly have said that my world and how I like to sing and what I'm accustomed to is more important than the fact that I am partnering with my brothers and sisters in this faith and celebrating God. We start making it about ourselves. We take God off the throne and we put ourselves on the throne. What we do here is about us honoring God. And so the corporate part of everything we do is important. The corporate part of taking communion together, of giving, of God, I'm going to do my best for 30 minutes. I'm going to do everything in my power to pay attention to your word. Not Michael, your word. All of that together is corporate worship. Conferences that we go to, special services, all of that is corporate levels of worship. Hey, remove the instruments and remove the singing, remove the communion, remove the giving, and I'm sitting in my life group and we're hanging out. And my vulnerability and opening up and sharing about my life and what's going on, that is corporate worship. Every bit of that. And it's an important part of us growing in our faith. It also says, though, worship is our response, corporate and personal. So what does this look like? What's personal worship look like? Well, I'm actually going to come back to that. I'm going to bring that up at the end. Okay? So the next phrase then is, it's our response is directed to God for who He is. To God. My worship, the worship, what I do, the singing, the giving, the listening, all the corporate stuff that we just talked about, we'll bring in the personal in just a second. All of that is directed toward God. I remember one time in high school, I was had my eyes on a girl. And she went to another church. She went to another school, which was like perfect, which means I could act the way I wanted to over at my school. And then, you know, just impress her with the Michael that I guarded myself. You know, I'm going to act this way. And she was really involved in her church. And she was part of the worship praise team thing. And she could sing. Like, I mean, she had some pipes. Man, she could sing. And her parents were all involved with the church. And my parents were involved in the church. And I was involved in the church. But, boy, let me tell you, when I was over at Galilee Christian Church, I no more paid attention to the dang song service than whatever. I mean, I was a typical teenager that sat with the youth group. Our youth group sat in the front, And then we were kind of a little rowdy, so then we got moved to the back, and we loved that because now we're behind our parents. We can do what we wanted to back then. And then we got in trouble there, and then we had to sit with our parents. But I can tell you this right now. When the song service came on, like, I mean, I didn't pay attention. No offense to Doug Mize, Mr. Satterfield, yep, Bryce Satterfield, nope, those guys did their best to try to lead us, and I just didn't check out. I mean, I was not engaged at all. But when I went to his girlfriend's church, by golly, I sang. You want to know why? Because she was up here on the stage, and she was singing. And I'm like, I am going to impress her. And I would sing. That's where I actually learned all the old hymns. Not at my church, but, you know, at her church, trying to impress her. My worship was not directed towards God. It was directed towards something else. And believe it or not, we do this. We direct our worship other places a lot of times. And so it's a response from us, and it's directed toward God for who He is. So let me ask that question to you, church. Who is God? I mean, it's good to be able to answer this from a historical and a factual point of view. You know, you're having a conversation and somebody asks you, who is God? You should be able to answer the question, who God is. But come on, who is God? If I asked you, hey, who's your spouse? Oh, you could give me a name, Amanda Sykes. But if I asked you, no. Really, who is your spouse? You could start to give me details. The details that bring joy. The details that bring heartache. The details that only you as a spouse know about that other person. Who is God? Who is God? God's the author of life. God is healer. God is provider. God is divine. God is wise. God is loving. When I think about my faith journey and my relationship with God, these are the details about God that I know, I've seen, and I've experienced it, these attributes in my life. When you want to know, Michael, who is God in your life, these are the things, these are the characteristics that I have seen part of my faith journey. Maybe you've experienced something different. Maybe you've experienced God's peace. Maybe you've experienced miracles in your life. Maybe you've experienced, and you would answer it because you know those details about who God is. On a side note, our next sermon series after this is called Who is God? And we are looking at several attributes of God for the sole purpose of trying to know Him better. It's our response to God. And who is He? And what has He done for you? I mean, like, that's next, right? It's our response to God for who He is and what He has done. Can you articulate what God has done for you? Oh, yeah, I mean, He's blessed me. He's blessed my family. He's given me everything. I'm going to tell you right now, when it comes to evangelism and when it comes to sharing your faith, I believe being able to answer this question is the best way to share our faith. When I can communicate with someone, this is what God has done in my life. These are the things. This is the stuff that, as I've been a faith follower, that this is the stuff that I have seen God do in my life. And here's the double-edged sword with blessings and being curses and stuff. We live in this first world country. We live and have the best life of people in the world based on the highest standard of living. We have the highest standard of living in the history of the world when it comes to luxury and comfort and convenience. We have it. If you are a lower class income person, you have it. You have more opportunity and you have more readily available to you than other parts of the world. And that's an amazing blessing that God has let us be part of this, live in this part of this world at this time period. But this also can hinder recognizing and acknowledging what God has done for us, because I, Michael, am guilty of taking credit for so much of my life and what I have and what I have to be thankful for. I forget to recognize and acknowledge that God has done these things in my life. And so worship is a response directed to God for who He is and for what He has done. And if you do anything from this sermon, I encourage you to make a list. Make a list of what God has done for you in your life. I love Paul and his writing to the Philippian church. This has changed my prayer life, and we're talking about prayer, but it's all part of worship. Where he talks about in Philippians that we bring with thanksgiving in our heart, bring before the Lord your petitions. Bring before the Lord the things you ask. And there was a season of life where I was praying for some heavy things. And I started just writing down things that I was thankful for. Writing down things that, man, this has been part of my life, God. I recognize that you've answered this. I recognize prayers that have been answered. Every single bit of that. And you want you to know, it changed my perspective on prayer. And I believe that when we know and we list out the things that God has done for us, it takes this whole worship thing to another place. I want to tell you, I don't know if I've ever shared this story. I know I've debated on sharing it. I've got a great relationship with Joe. He doesn't know this is coming, okay? And he doesn't know, but there's a moment, in my opinion, that took our relationship to another place. He gave me a coffee cup. Sure did. Big 32-ounce tumbler. I use it for a coffee cup. It can be used for anything, right? But inside this coffee cup, it's got a patch, all right? And it's a patch, and I don't remember the exact significance to Tanner, all right? You can ask him later. But it's got some significance to Tanner when he was at the Air Force Academy. Now, here's the thing. That isn't the deal, all right? He actually went, and I know Cher Bear, there's stories here. It's like, oh, great, this science experiment that Joe's doing could just kill off the minister. He actually took this tumbler off the shelf. I'm assuming that it was new and not out of the kitchen cabinet, and he cut the tumbler, he cut the top lip of this tumbler off. He then inserted this patch in between the two, you know, those tumblers, they're double-walled, right? He inserted the patch between the double wall, And then he used this food grade glue to basically glue the part that he cut off back onto the top. Okay? And then it's got coffee in it, and I mean not the cup, but the patch mentions coffee, and I'm telling you, it's like, wow, Michael, that's a really good story. But here's what it did to the relationship. There's an acknowledgement based on a gift that was given to me that had thought, that had effort. It had me in mind completely. Okay? And the fact that that is my favorite cup. Now, I don't drink from it every single day because I'm scared that when we wash it, the food grade, I don't know anything about food grade glue, okay? But I don't want it to wear out. I want that to be something that I take with me to the next house and keep for a long period of time. I don't like it when my kids use it. I'm like, hey, you stop that right now. And that right there, in my opinion, that very act took the relationship to a different place. You want to know why? Because of what it did for me and the acknowledgement and the realization in my life that, hey, we just didn't go to the Tervis Tumblr store and look at all the ones with the catchy sayings on it and say, ooh, I'll take this one and now wrap it up and give it to you. It was something that was done for me specifically. And that's what making this list is all about. These are the things that God has done in our lives. These are the miracles. These are the healings. These are the answered prayers. This is the provision that God has done in my faith journey. Man, it takes that relationship to another place. And no offense to Joe, but God's done so much more than a coffee cup. I promise you. So if you do anything from this sermon, I encourage you to do that. And here's the last part of the definition. Now we've got to wrap it up. It is expressed in and by the things we say and the way we live. This is actually our personal response. Worship is our response, both personal, or both corporate and personal. This expressed in and by the things we say and the way we live, this is the personal response. The things we say and how we say them, the way we live our lives, that's a personal response, church. The things we say, how we say them. The way we live our lives. That is a personal response. That's so much bigger than what takes place Sunday morning. I mean, your worship is going to get tested when you go to whatever restaurant you're about to go to in 20 minutes. How you say the things you say to the person waiting on you. The attitude that you have when they get your order wrong. My interaction and response with the annoying boss or the hot-headed spouse or the pushy customer is all a part of worship. How I respond and how I interact with these people in these moments, it's all part of worship. And church, here's the truth. When I am becoming like Jesus, these interactions with these people begin to change. As I become like Jesus, my worship, as Paul writes, he will find acceptable. And I think John the Baptist, the cousin of Jesus who was sent to prepare the way, had the best mindset when it comes to worship. He's talking to a group of his followers. He said, he must increase, and I must decrease. Church, worship is making our lives more about God than it is about us. And it's expressed. It is expressed in and by the things we say and the way we live. So much more to worship than what's taking place right here. How will you worship the Lord this week? Hey, God, we love you, and I know, Lord, I want to worship you well. God, when I drive through Atlanta today, I want to worship you well. When things don't go my way, when I'm tired, when life is throwing curveballs, I want to worship you well. God, I want to worship you better here in this corporate setting. God, forgive me when I make this about me and my preferences and my likes instead of about you. And so, Lord, I pray that my life, my attitude, my words, how I treat people, God, I pray that every bit of that is directed towards you. God, I'm gonna fail along the way. I'm gonna get angry. I'm gonna say things, Lord, I know that I'm not supposed to say. And so, God, when we think about worship and we think about what you have done for us, may your grace be the first thing that comes to mind. And God, I thank you for your grace already. I thank you for extending your grace to me, moving forward when I know that, God, I'm going to mess up. So God, I pray that I do become a better worshiper. Pray these things in your name. Amen.